Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the show that brings together three well-known friends to chew the fat over three thought-provoking questions or wash down with three glasses of wine. And I am so chuffed to be in the company of the three men joining me today. First up, he's arguably the godfather of British podcasting, a hip-hop artist and spoken word poet who sold out the Royal Albert Hall and played Glastonbury, Coachella, Reading, you name it. He's been on that stage. He's also a patron of the British Stammer Association, who quit his award-winning XFM show, The Beatdown, to launch his own podcast, Distraction Pieces. Yes, I know, you know it. Which features blockbusting guests like James McAvoy, Russell Brand, Kathy Burke, Zane Lowe, Liam Howlett, Eddie Izzard, and probably hundreds more. Not surprisingly, Distraction Pieces went on to bump Serial off the British iTunes charts. Oh, and he just casually made his acting debut alongside Tom Hardy in Taboo. Scroobius Pip, it is my pleasure.
It's my pleasure to have an introduction like that. That's lovely.
What a life.
Thank you. Cheers.
Do you feel good about yourself?
I do. That was great. That makes me, yeah, you don't actually take time to sit back and appreciate anything. Now I feel I've lived a far better life than I
probably gave you credit for on the way here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'll alongside you today, we have two, you might say, forefathers of White Wine Question Time, the founders, alongside Pip, of the Drunk Cast and, of course, Hardcore Listings. They are now the hosts of Pod Bible and the editors, alongside Pip, of its accompanying magazine. It's Stu Whiffin.
Hello.
Stu.
You all right?
Last time seen in my back garden.
It was. You was kind enough to give up a couple of hours of your time and you come and done the Off the Beaten Track podcast.
Which is such a great podcast,
I'm
by the
so
way.
I'm so pleased to hear he was invited.
I've been hanging around that
just
for
turned up. Yeah.
I last seen being chased out of my back garden.
Excellent.
And then sitting to your left, we have, of course, the third spoke on your triangle, if triangles have spokes. It's Chris Glasson.
Hello. Hey, Kate.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, I wanted to give Pip a little applause there, which I don't normally do, and that was an amazing readout.
Yeah.
On our podcast, that's the most amount of research I've ever seen. Like for our own podcast, that's more than we've ever done on 200 episodes, Kate. So well done.
Yay, I feel like I'm winning. Now, you three have been mates since school might be a stretch, certainly since your student days, is that right?
College, yeah. For me and Pip.
Well, me and Chris, we were college days and onwards. And me and Stu, it was kind of, when me and Chris were friends in the college days, we were getting kicked out of the club that Stu is in charge of and runs.
Yeah.
And later down the line, we then all became friends and linked up.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it worked, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember you coming in and asking if you could DJ one night.
Yes.
And that didn't go quite so well, did it?
No, I'd written a letter, weirdly, to ask if I could DJ and send
a
tape.
That's so polite.
Yeah, and then the night I went there, I introduced
myself.
You never
told me that you wrote a letter to Stuart to DJ.
And, dear Stu.
And sent a mixtape. How romantic.
Oh!
But then I went down on the night to meet him, and he kind of recognised me associated me with some troublesome youths who come to that area. Just me and my mates. But and because we didn't talk much immediately, I got blind drunk and threw up roughly on your feet in the toilets that night. So I didn't get the gig in the end. That was kind of my audition. Because you were like, come down, I'll show you how it works. I came down, you're like, all right, I'm busy at the moment. I was like, I'm going to get blind drunk. So,
do you know what, though? You come from a pocket of Essex U3 that has created some great ensemble professional lineups of friends that that turn to business. So I can think of the Prodigy, who are friends of mine and yours. I think of my ex Darren Emerson, who's from your neck of the woods, who was part of that electronic dance scene with Underworld. And then there's you three, and you really have, I mean, you are still going. It's got to be coming up 25-30 years on.
It's a while. It's about
friends.
Sort
of.
Yeah, completely.
Do you mean Chris?
We've had some fallouts. No, we haven't.
Everyone has their ups and downs.
But we've had the club night together for 10 years now.
Is it 10 years?
And that's mad. That's crazy. Because, again, a club night in London, that rarely lasts a few years. So it's crazy that we've managed to keep that.
So for 10 years, Pip's been wearing a lizard mask DJing.
I DJ with a rubber lizard mask.
Originally, we were both going to DJ with one, and I couldn't find one I liked. So then he just kept on patching. Have you got one yet? I was like, no. It's been 10 years now, Kate.
I don't think it would accommodate your beard now, Chris, to be honest.
I had to cut a hole in mine for my beard. Genuinely, it's a big rubber lizard mask that I've cut the bottom off so my beard pokes out. It's got eye holes. After the first one, I had to puncture it because I realised I can't hear anything really because it didn't have any ear holes. So I had to puncture it myself. And then, now every time it's got like a glass, a plastic cover on the eyes, so it just steams up. It really isn't a good idea.
It's like
for
a cheap Daft Punk.
Professional. Really cheap Daft Punk, yeah.
I always think when I see them, you must be sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we've been doing that for 10 years.
What's the club night called?
It's called We Are Lizards.
Yep.
That's why I got the lizard mask.
And where is it?
It's at a book club in Shoreditch on Leonard Street. And 10 years this year.
And it pulls a tasty crowd, doesn't it?
It really does.
We've been really blessed, haven't we? Because it's, like you said, like club nights generally have a lifespan of a couple of years. And we've had some amazing people come and play records for us, haven't we?
Yeah.
As well as Chris.
How many of us have had people ask to turn down the music?
Put
your hand up. How many times?
Stu, so many times, 10 minutes into his set, someone's come up and he's thought they're requesting a song. He's like, oh, good. They go, could you turn it down, please, mate?
That's up there with the greatest one I had was probably about 2 years ago, and I was DJing at my place in Essex, and for those that are listening, I'm 46, and this young girl came up. She must have been sort of early 20s, and she came up to the DJ booth and she went, excuse me, are you Stuart Whiffin? And I was like, yes. And I thought, still got it. She went, you went to school with my mum, she said to say hello. I was just like, oh, I'll leave it.
Time for bed.
Brilliant.
And off you go. So the club night is something that's always been a glue for you three over the last 10 years. But you fall into different projects together. Drunkcast, I was aware of Drunkcast because when I was working up the idea for White Wine Question Time, I thought I need to research, has anybody else done something like this? Not only had you done it, you just go out and get plastered.
Yeah, we get really messy, and that came from the club night, really, because we realised that on the club night, once a month at that point, we just have such a laugh standing outside the club and such a laugh in the car on the way home and stuff like that, and the focus for us was not on the club night part of it, it was on the hanging out,
just the trimmings,
just catching up.
So we just I'd kind of suggested we just get drunk in the shed at the end of Stu's garden, the Whiffin. He's built a little bar in there.
The man cave.
Yeah, and it was going to be, we thought it may be 2-3 hours. I think the first one was 5 hours or so.
5 hours.
And again, we got really messy, but it's similar.
You're coherent, though. I've got to give it to you.
Well, we were surprised because you'd established your podcast by then. It was already like a really successful podcast. And we was like, why do you want me and this idiot coming on spoiling it?
I can't believe you put it out.
I mean, a little bit of truth is it started over Christmas because it's really hard to get guests in December, as you may know. So to be able to record 5 episodes at the end of my mate's garden was a real handy treat.
Just got you through the festive period.
But it did then become like one of the most popular things that we do on the podcast.
I mean, how quickly did you get to 1 million downloads? It was super quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was after the first few we got to 1 million downloads on that.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's it's kind of a Trojan horse. It's in the same way as White Wine Question Time is. On the surface, we're meeting up and we're getting drunk and we have a bit of a laugh, but we do always it's really weird because we don't generally compliment each other or say nice things about each other. But I selected these two carefully because I know they're good people. So when we are drunk and then we get onto a subject like trans rights or different things like that.
And you guys discuss everything.
Yeah, and we're going to have a good conversation. And the thing that occurred to me was there's a certain area of people who aren't going to go and read an article on trans rights as an example or watch a documentary, but they will listen to three blokes who've got accents like us in a shed getting drunk. So if we can then say, you know, bring up how pointless it is to have all these rivalries or get picky over how someone wants to be referred to. So it doesn't affect you. It's there, like, it's, you shouldn't, you're making a big deal out of something that there's a good chance will never affect you in your life. And have these kind of bigger discussions within all the messiness. And it kind of, it worked nicely.
And we carefully dumb it right down as well, don't we? we plan every sentence, don't we?
You don't want to dazzle people with that intellect, do you?
I selected Chris carefully. Though. We need to dumb it down.
But what I love about it is, there is so much that I identify with from my own conversations with my girlfriends.
Yeah.
So I kind of applaud you for opening so many gateways to proper conversations.
I think you're completely right. Chris and I, this is all of a sudden thrown in heaviness, but Chris and I lost a friend of ours at a really early age, when we're all 21, to suicide. And that can really kind of make you realise how literally deadly it can be to be closed off from your friends, to not express. I've worked with Calms since they started just over 10 years ago, and they really highlighted how it is an important thing. And it's what, As a fan of listening to their podcast, Hardcore Listening, it's because I get to hear term of mates. Like, if I'm away and busy a lot, it's beautiful to be able to plug in to just two of your mates having a chat
that
and having
not
a messing
out. That's not how we hear it.
What we hear
is condescending messages.
Yeah.
Because we've got, because of our guesswork, he's like, I can't believe you said Ken Livingstone when you meant Ben Kingsley.
And stuff. I mean, that's pretty bad, isn't it?
That's quite bad. He also was talking about, and what I like with Chris is when he gets these wrong, I let it roll for about a minute just till he digs deep enough. When he was talking about Amir Khan, the mayor of London, like
Amir Khan.
The thing is, it's weird because it's terrible.
It's gone so red.
It's literally
so
a London mayoral dyslexia because Ken Livingstone and Amir Khan. Again, it seems to be a thing with mayors specifically that you just get wrong.
What's he going to do with Boris?
Just names. I'm always, my mum's the worst at names, and she's called literally.
What's your mum's name? Can you remember?
Just about. Mum, she is called Real Family Drama because she's terrible with names. We've, like, my brother and his first wife, then calling his new wife his first wife repeatedly for years, like a campaign. And it's not my mum trying to do it maliciously. And I'm the same. I've always jumbled names up.
Chris comes to my house every Saturday and has done for maybe 4 years to record podcasts. And I've got the friendliest dog on the planet. My dog's name is Zavi. He is a male dog.
It's the prettiest dog.
Here she is. What? Here she is. She. What's her name? I'm like, Chris, it's a boy.
And the thing there is, everyone knows that dogs are boys and cats are girls. So it's real simple. How can you mess this up?
Fool. I'd love to say I was antagonising you with that, but genuinely, I say it and I'm like, I've done it again.
Okay, you ready for your first question?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Okay. Pip, this was inspired by you. You quit your radio show at XFM, which had won a Sony because it was so good, to launch Distraction Pieces. And that was really before podcasts were even much of a thing here in the UK. And you did it upon the advice of Joe Rogan, who has the number one podcast in the world.
Yeah.
So my question to you all is, what other pieces of great advice have completely changed your lives?
Oh, wow. I think the first one that comes to mind that I've used throughout my career a lot, and I used to say it to you all the time, was just, I heard, I think it was Seinfeld who I read in an interview. It just said, if you've got something to fall back on, then you're more likely to fall back. So
that's a great,
I've kind
pile
of done
wisdom.
That repeatedly. When I quit my job in a record store to do music, it was because I don't want to do music on the side. I want to be 100% in music so that it has to succeed. I don't come from a wealthy family, so I gave myself a year. I'd saved up enough for a year to do music. I was like, it's got to succeed. There isn't an option of not succeeding. And that was the same on quitting the radio show to do the podcast, on stopping touring and doing music to do acting. All of these things, it's all been when something's going well, going, right, I'm going to stop that now so that that's not my crutch. Do you know what I mean?
If
I want to dip
Kim.
Into acting, but no, oh, I can tour and make money and so on and so forth. It's like, I'm not going to get good at acting. I'm going to have it as a side thing. Whereas if I stop, then that's 100% of it. And
let's talk a little bit about the acting then, because right, you go, okay, I'm going to do acting. Right? And you go in and you star alongside flipping Tom Hardy.
Yeah,
I
proper lucked out.
Is it BBC drama,
yeah,
Taboo?
Yeah, Taboo, yeah.
You're brilliant in it, by the
and
way.
And again, what was great was working, I clicked with Tom Hardy and Stephen Graham, who are two of the people who I've got all of their DVDs on my DVD
He's
wall.
He's amazing
so,
as well, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, and they both just really took me under their wing and helped me and guided me. And yeah, kind of, it feels like they're coaching me along in this weird career change. So yeah.
So really, Jerry Seinfeld and Joe Rogan, I mean, you've taken advice from some pretty top cats.
Some
there.
Big names, and both beginning with J. Wonder who that means. I think no. Okay, on to the next one.
But it's I hear the sense in what you're saying. Sometimes a plan B is too much of a safety net.
It'll always absolutely. Remain a plan B. Yeah, it'll always
never
sit
looked
there
at
as
it
an
like
option.
That. That's a really interesting way to frame it. Mm. Yeah.
There's lots of broke people out there who's followed that advice. They're homeless. They haven't got a shirt on their back. And they're like, oh, man.
I've not exactly pushed any of my... So that worked for me, but I don't know how.
But read the T's and C's.
It's inexplicable, so...
Stu, what about you? What's a life-changing piece of advice?
This is quite cheesy, but I was watching the Smash Hits poll winners poll party.
Now you're talking my language, wow. Stu.
And Naina Cherry won something.
Was it, what was it, Buffalo Stance or Manchild?
It would have been probably for the album, Raw Like Sushi. And
great album.
And I think Naina Cherry's switched on. You know, I think she's my dream podcast guest, Naina Cherry. And she just literally said, life's what you make it, so make it better. And I just felt, that's pretty decent.
Yeah,
makes sense. I get what you're saying. And I kind of... I've always looked at things as trying to sort of write a book. So I just think if you do the same thing for your whole life, I don't think it's going to be...
It's one chapter.
It's going to be one chapter. So try and put it in chapters. And if you have to do something, like kind of what Pip said, stop something and do something else because, you know, it could get interesting. You know, you don't know where it's going to go. And that's kind of something that I've always done. And that comes from having... I think that, you know, like Pip as well, a good work ethic as well, and be prepared to kind of throw yourself at stuff, but work your nuts off to do it.
Yeah, I think graft should sit in the heart of everything that you do.
My problem at times is I don't necessarily think things through before I decide I'm doing it. And this was the case with the music career. I'd quit my job, I'd made an album, and I was going to go and play on street corners and do whatever I could. I hadn't thought about the fact at that point. I'd never played live at all. And Chris came along with me, living in my space cruiser for like a month or whatever, just playing on street corners, like outside other people's gigs. And we got to the first one. And because Chris was there, I couldn't backtrack. We got there and he was like, you're going to start then? And I was like, I don't know. I'm not sure. Just trying to find excuse. I think if I'd been on my own, I would have just gone... Right, I'm going home now.
You did look a bit non-committal.
I hadn't thought about it. I hadn't thought about it until we got there. But because there was a mate there to go, go on there, mate.
So, Chris, what was the advice that changed your life?
It's a popular philosopher from Love Island a few weeks ago.
Go on.
So I really don't watch it. I'm going to say that, but I occasionally dip
but
in
I
and
have
out of
watched it.
I enjoy bits and pieces of all television. And my girlfriend was watching it, and it was Tommy Fury.
Yeah.
And he said something along the lines of, "You've got a gut for a reason. You've got a gut instinct for a reason, so you should use it." And I just thought, wow. It blew my mind. I was sitting there saying, that's really quite like, I've just had like a eureka moment with that. I've had an epiphany because a lot of the time when I have gut instinct, I'll try and break it down and make a logical answer as to why I shouldn't pay attention to it. And so many times that's not served me well. Yeah. That I've overthought something and my gut was right.
Yeah.
And listening to Tommy Fury say like that, well, it's there for a reason, right? She should use it. And I thought, oh, man, yeah, it's kind of quite true.
See, sometimes people confuse gut instincts for fear or anxiety. Yeah. And actually, sometimes what they are is just a massive flag that's been raised going, don't do that.
Yeah.
Or think about this. And you're right. The number of times I've buried that thinking, well, no, that sounds pretty reasonable to me. And then you go, oh, shit.
And it can be because you can't articulate the reason why that's a bad idea or a good idea. Yet your subconscious can. And it could be because it's seen five or six events that you can't consciously remember.
Yep.
But your subconscious can. So your gut is saying there's something up here, but you can't pull to your conscious why that's a bad idea.
Do you think sometimes though, we're just too busy to sit down and analyse it? And actually sometimes we should just go, okay, pause, gut instinct. Right, let's have a moment with this. Let's break it down.
100%. But I mean, I'd also say, not lines of advice, but I think it's really important to not to take inspiration from the people around you and your day-to-day life and things like that, and see in them what you would like more of in you, if that makes sense. I've always hated the kind of that it became a thing for years of the kind of, oh, you've changed. It's like, you should be changing.
You
that's a
evolve.
Good thing. And just going around there, like Chris was always, I remember Chris and my mate, another Stu, were always two people who from really early on, and I wasn't this guy at all, from really early on, wherever we went, they were going to have a good night and a good time. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to this good place or this bad place. It was like, we're going to be there. Let's make it enjoyable. Yeah. And I didn't have that. I was the, oh, what kind of music are they going to be playing? Oh, what kind of, is it a cool club? Is it this club or that club? And getting caught up in the ins and outs, where it's like, if we're going, we're going.
Just make,
and that was something to learn from just as some mates. And finding those things in all your different mates. It's like, right, that's, I wish I had more of that. And then go, oh, I'll have more of that then. I'll do more of that. It's not, it can be a conscious choice.
The master of positivity is Pip. Like, the reason why he is successful and irritating to be around a lot is because he can't, you
see
can't
that?
Bring
give
him
one
down.
Hand, taking in the other.
you can't bring him really down. You've really got to work to shit in his soul, you know. It's not something you can do quite easy. And so anything would become an opportunity. And if there's a problem or a guest would fall through for him or any other sort of like business thing that we're working on, that's okay because we can do this now.
Yeah.
And it's so true.
New opportunity to do this.
You've just got to change the frame, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you've just got to put through a different lens.
Yeah.
For me, the one thing that I always held on to, and I loved her, was Audrey Hepburn said, and it's a really fantastic way to look at how you read a word. She said, there's no such thing as impossible. When you break it down, it says, I'm possible.
Yeah.
And that's so true.
It's so simple, isn't it?
It's so simple. You know, just break it up, stick an apostrophe in it, it becomes something else entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all about the framing, isn't it?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I love that. It's fascinating.
I can't believe I've just quoted Audrey Hepburn.
It's good.
Yeah. Okay.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, question two, gentlemen. Your glasses are full. Let's see if you can get your heads around this one. I would consider you all to be innovators in your field. So what I'd like to know from you is what you think is the greatest invention of all time and why.
Wow. Oh, what good, a question.
Is that a good one?
Yeah. I recently purchased a soap aerator.
What?
All right, go on.
Exactly.
Tell me more.
I've decided, Stu inspired me in a way that made me feel terrible the other day because we were talking about aftershaves and Stu went, well, I only get like ones that are sort of cosmetically approved, not tested on animals. And I thought, I've not thought about that. And I thought that they all probably aren't. But I thought, God, my purchases these days on like cleaning products and smelly products are probably
not that.
That's really dumbed down then. And I decided to stop using shower gel. So recently I've switched back to soap.
Good boy.
And then I discovered that there's things called soap aerators, which keep your soap drier when you put them down. They dry quicker, so they last longer. And that's how exciting my life is these days.
Right, that's
well, that's okay. I mean, it's not penicillin or electricity, but it's close. It's environmental.
Top that.
Huh? Yeah, is that, I was literally going to ask, is that a soap dish? That's
yeah.
just a
yeah,
soap
yeah,
dish,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, but it's a soap sponge. A soap it goes sponge. In the soap dish.
That's right. shit.
It's not yeah, even a bar of soap.
No, it's not even the soap. It's what he's putting the soap on.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Chris, yeah. that's rubbish.
The what? Soap is very much tested on animals. But oh. the sponge he's putting it on is clean as a whistle.
I do that myself.
That's been whipped from some rare coral reef somewhere. No, that's...
I'm joking.
Chris,
I'm messing. Obviously.
You're not. It's not. He that thinks that Amir Khan.
You was going to roll with that.
No, of course not.
I totally was.
From the man that thought Amir Khan was the mayor of London, yeah, yeah. I give you the soap dish.
And Ken Livingstone was fantastic in Sexy Beast. that's just hardcore listing highlights right there.
And Gandhi.
Sublime in that. My genuine answer that comes to mind, I did. Photography at uni, which again I was at uni in Wolverhampton and Chris was at uni in Birmingham, so that was where I think that's where we became closer friends really, because at college we were had some mutual mates, but
we
it was at uni
like
that we really
yeah friends, I'd say then.
At uni we got an upgrade but genuinely on that I always looked like an idiot in class, and I like even more so now. Photography still blows me away.
Does
I genuinely
it?
Think that we I think it's really important at times to not lose the excitement of childhood and children, because it's mad. Like, this is a real thing that's happening, and then we grab a bit of it,
yeah.
and it's stored, and it's there forever, and we've grabbed that. That's happened, it's gone, but
you're capturing moments.
It's stored, yeah, and it's mind-blowing. But more so, I mean, I guess I don't understand the digital one, so it was more excitement of how it's you're literally exposing light on a bit of film, and that again, it's mind-blowing, because it's light... bouncing off a real moment. I know it all sounds stupid, particularly as we've all got cameras on our phones now and Instagram filters and everything else, but genuinely that act of being able to just grab moments in time is genuinely think we don't appreciate it as much as
you're
we maybe
probably
should.
You're probably right, but we don't no. actually.
Because it's so common and normal now, but it's literally mind-blowing. That was a real thing.
What would be the one photograph that you would hang on your wall?
I've got two that come to mind, and they're both photos my dad took. They are of me, but they're photos my dad took. In fact, I'll add a third. That was a photo that Chris
really?
Took.
Is it really? Yeah, I know what one you're going
to
talk
Yeah, we'll go
about.
On to that yeah. next. But no,
the naked
and my
one.
Dad took two photos because, again, I've got a terrible memory for my child, and I think that's another thing that we do. Our memories are actually our photos.
Yeah.
Like a lot of my memories of childhood, I don't actually remember them. I've just seen the photo album. And there's one that was me right. on holiday in France, and I had a tiny little cake, and there's... a one candle in it, and that was, this is all now going to sound heavy, but that was the holiday that I almost drowned, and it's where I got my stutter. Dead on cue there. Did you see that? It was like it knew yeah. the story was coming. Yeah. I almost drowned on that holiday, and it's seemingly where my stutter came from, because it's often assumed to be from a traumatic experience.
Post-traumatic stress,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah. So it was, but there's just this picture my dad took, and it's me looking happy as anything because I've got a cake and a candle in it. And then there's another one of me and my brother, and it's again my dad was going through this period of wanting to be a photographer, and it's so cheesy, but it's two photos he took of us blowing the what's the one, the flowers that are the little, the white
dandelions.
Bit, the dandelions, yeah, and it's us blowing that as little kids. And again, my brother is really important to me. There was a long period when we were teens where we hated each other and didn't get on at all, so it's kind of beautiful to look at that period I don't remember as such, that we were just...
And to be able to romanticise it.
Yeah, completely, 100%.
Yeah. Interesting that picture of you with that cake, you remember that holiday, but I bet that's not what you remember from that holiday, because that will probably always symbolise when your stutter started.
That's what's interesting, because it is what I remembered. At about 13 or 14, I had hypnosis to try and get to the bottom of why I've got a stutter, and I'd forgotten that had happened. I didn't know I'd almost died, because my parents quite rightfully downplayed it massively to try and keep me calm. My dad rushed into the sea and got me, because we were walking along a quiet beach and a wave swept up and took me out to sea. My dad noticed and rushed in and got me, and all I remembered was him saying, "Oh, I've ruined my trainers." Because they were purposely trying to downplay it, because they didn't want me to be panicking. Yeah, that's kind of the things I remember from that holiday. So it wasn't until I had this hypnosis that I learnt that was that a recurring dream I'd had, where a witch is coming up the stairs and I can't scream. This hypnotherapist theorises that was me trying to scream to my parents and the waves going in my mouth, because I was trying to scream out to get their attention and waves were going in my mouth. And that stuff, I'd genuinely forgotten that. I remember the trainers, I remember my cake, and I remember on the campsite. It was like a key camp thing in the south of France. I remember there was a kid who was mine and my brother's best friend, and genuinely, it wasn't until years later I'd realised he'd given us a fake name. But as far as we knew, his name was Bum Bum. 100% believed that as a child. We were like, oh, we met this kid called Bum Bum. He was great. Literally in my teens, I'm like, I don't think that was his real name, guys. I think Bum Bum might have chosen that name for himself.
I think he might have been a Nigel.
Yeah. It's like Scroobius Pip. I almost went with Bum Bum instead of Scroobius Pip. Like, you're going to name yourself? Damn.
But it's amazing, isn't it, how we bury difficult memories and we put another storyline over the top of it.
Yeah.
But sometimes we do that as a self-prevention.
It can be important. One of the things I worry about a lot in the kind of new social media age, where everyone is telling people how they should react and stuff, I think, I don't want to say victims, survivors of traumas are told how they're meant to react, are told that they're meant to be broken by it, or they're meant to be crushed. And sometimes that's not... Every individual has a different way of coping with these things. And I'm not saying you should hold these things down, but for some people, you might have to for a certain amount of time. And that might be what's best for you. And it's really weird with so much of the social media stuff where, there's been a lot of things where people are realising now that they were a victim of something a long time ago. And that's fine, because they've been able to get on with their life and not be affected by it. And that can be really important.
That can be really positive, that you can get on with life in spite of that, and then when you're maybe more ready, it might be 20 years later that you look at something and you're okay to deal with it then.
It can be too big an issue for you at the time to unstick, and sometimes you might not even know that it even happened. So you went to therapy. We mentioned like our friend dying. I didn't know. Like I cried. I felt I had managed it reasonably well given the circumstances, and 5 or 6 years later I was depressed, miserable, really didn't like myself. She would probably say, you shouldn't like yourself. And I ended up going to...
say, none of us liked you then.
I like you, Chris.
You don't know me well enough yet.
That's
trust
true,
me.
Yeah.
I'll antagonise you. And I went to a hypnotherapist, and when she explained different things, she said, your psyche can be like a deck of cards. And certain events happen, and it might be half things that people say to you. You might not even be aware that you was in on that conversation, or you observed that thing, and your brain took a mental note of it.
Subconsciously.
And then your personality starts building around that event. And I went through hypnotherapy. She found the event. I did not expect to see it where it was. And
the event being the loss of your friend?
Well, it wasn't. It was that obviously he passed on. It was that when I phoned him, it was his birthday, it was his 21st, and I phoned his house. This is back when mobile phones weren't that great. Phoned his house, and his dad said he's taking his life. And I just dropped to the floor in my flat in university, and I just broke down. But what I hadn't realised is when that happened, my subconscious, a friend of mine was in the room, and a friend of mine was watching me have this breakdown. And my subconscious made a mental note of how they were looking at me. And my subconscious decided that was he was thinking I was overreacting. And therefore, my subconscious decided that I wasn't a nice person and I wasn't a good friend.
Wow.
How crazy is that? And
that's a snapshot moment, right?
Exactly.
And that went on to inform how much of your life?
Yeah, for 4 or 5 years.
How crazy
it built
is that?
And built and built. And then when the hypnotherapist said, "Are you sure that's what he meant when he looked at you?" I'm like, "Well, obviously, I don't know what he meant." She was like, "Well, exactly." And it was like pulling that one card out of that deck, and I was like,
yeah.
"Oh, right." And I started to feel a lot happier, and growth happened as a result.
But do you think if you'd looked at that before that point in your life, you would have been ready to unpack all of that stuff?
Possibly
and make
not.
Sense of it?
No,
yeah, it's
no
interesting,
way.
Isn't it? It's interesting. Stu, greatest inventions?
I'm going to go for the Walkman.
Oh, wow. Change of gear.
Oh, it got all heavy there, so I'm going to throw some ridiculousness in.
Perfect.
And it was the Walkman.
Are we talking cassette or CD?
Cassette.
Nice.
And the reason being is I was the annoying kid in the 80s that hated going in. So everyone had a Commodore 64 or a Spectrum, and everyone wanted to go in and play computer games. And I was like, mate, I don't want to go in. And the only thing I liked about being indoors was playing my records. Mm. And so when the Walkman come out, I didn't ever have to be in because I could listen to my records when I was out.
Yeah.
And I think that Walkman was the thing that turned me on to music in a big way because I took it everywhere. That red Walkman, all I would do with my pocket money was buy batteries and blank tapes.
And make your own mixtapes.
And do my own mixtapes.
Play and record.
And I guess that probably led me into being a DJ and stuff like that. And music's been key in everything I've ever done since. And so I think that all stems from being able to take my music with me.
It's interesting that journey you make as a child of, you know, born in the 70s. We were born in the same year, you and I, Stu. And then you get the home stereo, right? And you're like, OMG, look at the size of this beast. It's got a wooden side. There's a double tape deck. You get really excited by it. But then there's the, will you turn that down? You can't listen to that now. We're trying to watch, you know, Nationwide.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there's headphones. And you go, I can lie next to the home stereo and listen to music. This is cool.
Yeah.
And then the Walkman comes along and it's a game changer.
Yeah.
And then the CD.
I was going to say, and then the Discman comes along and it's a little bit backwards because you're having to carry it perfectly flat.
Yeah,
as you're walking along the streets carrying it, or sitting in a car and just lifting it up a little bit because you don't want it to jumble, just holding it, floating it in the air. It's like, is this convenient? Is this more convenient? This doesn't feel more convenient.
It's not convenient, no, because it was awkward.
I've now got my hands full.
Yeah, I'm like practically walking through life like a waiter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a very delicate load.
Yeah. I can't defend myself
but
listening
I think you're right.
To a Walkman.
The cassette Walkman was genius because you could... You know, and we've discussed this, Joe, the passion of play and record, recording off the radio.
Wow. Yeah.
I used to dart in from wherever I was playing with my mates on the estate, whenever the Top 40 came on a Sunday, Bruno Brooks. I was like, right, my mission was play and record, cut Bruno out.
Yeah.
And then I've got my own mixtape for the week.
Yeah.
And I can learn all the songs, all the words for the week, and I'm going to be the pop queen of this here estate.
Love it.
And that was my life. And the smash hits lyrics would go up on the wall for that week and then carefully blue tack so they could come down and be replaced the following week. And that was my love affair with music.
What more do you want out of life?
Our kids don't have that now. They're watching people play video games on YouTube and I'm like, you don't know what you're missing.
I remember doing my paper round the week Ebenezer Good was number one.
And I
taped
Mr.
it off the radio because I'd tape it, but I'd wait. I wouldn't skip things out because I'd just want to record it and then I'd wait until I'm on my paper round to hear it. So I wouldn't know. So I'd genuinely be getting the countdown.
Thrill.
And that was number one. I was like, this feels so naughty. I didn't know why it was naughty. I just heard that they were questioning if it was allowed to be in the charts.
Yeah.
Didn't get any of the references, but I was like,
it's
naughty.
I got my
as well naughty.
But you also remember when Frankie Goes to Hollywood released Relax, right? And then and then I remember Mike Reed having an issue with it on Radio 1. He was like, this is terrible. I was like, why? Relax, don't do it if you want to get to it. Relax, don't do it when you want to come. What's your problem?
Yeah, okay. Chilling out, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Just relax, Mike.
Come where, Mike?
Yeah.
Come on, Mike.
I got my dad to take me to a working men's club in Tilbury because they had it on a jukebox and they wouldn't play on the radio, so he took me down there and I remember putting 5p in so I could hear Relax. And I was like...
That's a scene in a movie right
and
there.
And I was what's the fuss about? Like,
exactly.
Yeah. Like,
but also, George Michael released I Want Your Sex and nobody would play the video.
He was smiling all the way home on the back of the penny farthing. Beautiful, beaming.
But our kids don't get that. And also there was that thrill, Pip, like you were saying, of when the top 40 came on, you go, oh, right, everyone, we're in the top 10 now.
Yeah.
Where's everyone going to be?
Yeah.
And then you get to the top three and they go, and in at number three this week, you'd be like, oh, And then they say, you go, they could be number one. This could be a game changer. Or are they still there? And it was a piece of musical theatre that you live for every week.
We haven't had a drunk cast recently, so this for us, Kate, is a great opportunity.
I'm bringing it back.
Yeah, bring it back.
Yeah, it's a bit of old school right here.
Returning.
Okay, question number three. It harks back to your HMV days.
Yes.
So, Pip, as a young man, you quit your job and you'd saved up, and I thought this was quite responsible of you. You saved up enough money to not work for a year and kind of motored around the country in a Toyota Space Cruiser, which you also lived in.
Yeah.
So some might say that you had made yourself, I don't know, homeless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of. Again, I'm lucky. I had a room at my mum's house.
If you know what
I
mean?
So I never like to over-egg any of that because there's people in far worse situations.
Absolutely.
But,
But you chose to kind of take to the road for a year and see what else was out there for you. You wanted to start a career as a musician. So I wanted to know if at this point in your life now, you could take off for a year and quit all adult responsibilities. What vehicle would it be in? Where would you go? What would you do?
One of my biggest fantasies is just walking away from all social media and stuff like that. Like, in general,
really?
Like, you know, people have, like, I think it's a really positive thing to plan your funeral songs and stuff like that, because I think death shouldn't be a taboo. I think it's a fun game to play. Here's the songs I want, blah blah.
Well, it's an inevitability, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're literally
death,
it's gonna
taxes.
Happen. Yeah, it's gonna happen to all of us and everyone we have ever loved. So it's a nice cheery part of the podcast.
Absolutely. Cheers, Pip.
But no, I've always got a planned, this is going to be my last tweet, my last Facebook post and all that kind of thing. And again, I love the idea of just walking away from all of it and disappearing into the woods somewhere and just having just that escape from...
So really, so you would just like to go off-grid?
Just of everything. Because again, I mean, as these guys all know, I'm kind of a workaholic and I'm trying to change that a lot. I had a guy called Rutger Bregman on my podcast who's got an amazing book called Utopia for Realists, and he talks about a lot of stuff of how society is changing the wrong ways. Like, we seem to see how many hours we can get out every day and we guilt ourselves if we don't work extra hours, particularly if you're self-employed and self-motivated.
And also there's a horrible badge of honour of being the first in and the last out.
Yeah,
in terms
I
of
work
home,
the hardest.
Yeah.
And I've been the worst for that for years. I will always be. I'm constantly working and...
A hobby will become work for you as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's...
Oh, really?
It can be a real constant thing. So that becomes the kind of dream of, like, just I'll disappear and have some time off. It's that stupid thing. Apparently it's a really common one. And I had this like when I worked in shops and stuff. It's a really common fantasy of, this is so bleak, but it's genuinely, it's something like 50% of people in the UK have admitted to this, fantasizing of getting some kind of injury that means they're going to be in hospital and be forced to not be at work for a week, to not do anything for a week.
There's times I could have identified with that. What about you guys, where you think, yeah, actually, just want to hit pause and stop?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no? It's dark, isn't it?
I've definitely felt that.
But for me, as I said, it's more
not that
now.
I want to injure myself, but I just want to stop.
For me, it's more now, it's that I love the idea of just going, right, let's not, this is going to sound so weird and hippie and stuff like that, but I was watching a show at The Fringe by a guy called Rob Alton, and he's got a show called The Time Show, and it's all about time and clocks and things like that. And he kind of points out that time only is relevant because of all the other people around us, and we have to organise things and plan things. And it's just that, just it played into my thought of, what a beautiful life to have a week where you don't know what time it is, because you don't need to. Because you've not got an appointment to get to. You've not got a TV show that you have to watch at a certain time. You've not got any of these things. You've
got
that freedom. Yeah, time then becomes a work of fiction. You've just got existing and being.
And
present. And that sounds all hippie and whatnot, but... Again,
no,
I think that sounds
like the ultimate holiday from your head.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, it's that kind of that.
So you'd go off grid. What would you do? You said you'd go into the woods. What would you just? You would just go and literally tune out of the modern world for a while.
Yeah, I think so. I think again, I you'd be surprised how much I think about this. I'd probably have Netflix or something, so I can enjoy that kind of thing. But then, because of this thing that Rob Alton said, I was like, right, now I wouldn't want clocks. So maybe I might have some box sets. When I went away to write a little while ago, I kind of did this. It was, I was in Europe but I didn't turn on the roaming so people couldn't contact me unless I was on Wi-Fi. And I didn't have Sky or anything there. So the only things I took were a box set of amazing French films. Again, I'm making myself sound so pretentious, but these amazing French films. So the only time I was consuming anything, it was really amazing quality and it was beautiful and it was a work of art. I wasn't watching those things that were just, I'll stick this on.
Because it'll chew an hour
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and it will kill time. So, and that was, I only had time to do that for 4 days and I was writing, but I got so much done and felt so
liberated
and cleansed because I wasn't just going, here's another thing that I'm just churning through while I'm looking at my phone and fearing the slight moment of being with my own thoughts as such, if you know what I mean. So, yeah. Yeah, so I'd find some wood somewhere, a cabin.
You'd want to be able to have a Domino's delivered though, right?
Yeah, ideally, yeah. Yeah.
I know mean, what you're like,
takeaway would be
I got lost in the romance of you then, and he's just brought it right back.
Takeaway.
I mean, know him well. I know that he'd want to be able to get Domino's delivered.
Deliveries, right?
Mate,
yeah.
I'm happy to drive and collect. I don't want them to break my little circle, my fortress of solitude.
Yeah, but when they say it'll
I
be ready,
go out.
They'll say it'll be ready in 20 minutes. You're like, no, time frames.
Yeah, exactly. Again, it would be tough. I would have to. I'm happy taking my own food, mate. I can live outside of takeaway for a bit.
Nonsense. Absolutely nonsense. You'll go into a wood that's a mile away from a Domino's, and that's it. You'll be
part of this has come about because they were all furious with me on one of the hardcore listings. I think it was on a drunk cast because we were talking about Death Row meals. Oh, and yeah. My Death Row meal happens to all be available from Pizza Hut, which
all courses,
which just means I'm living my dream. Garlic bread with cheese, of course, it's the best.
Main course?
A stuffed crust pizza.
Main topping?
With just cheese and ham, because I think you should go the bare
room. Chili oil?
No, I'm fine, thanks.
Sorry. chocolate fudge cake as a
Ben and Jerry's full tub.
Wow.
So again, but that just...
I mean, you're ready to die with a bill that's less than 20 quid.
But that just means that I get to live my dream meal constantly, right? That's got to be a good thing. Or not constantly. I'm getting older now.
There's
I have
that
to keep an eye on that waistline.
But,
that,
yeah.
See, the
he's not even got anywhere near the all-you-can-eat salad bar. So, Stu, where are you going to go for a year if you can quit all your adult responsibilities, and what car's going to take you there?
It's really weird you say this, Kate, because was I not saying to yous earlier that I've been shopping for campers for the last 3 weeks.
Campers,
yes.
VW? No. I'm not too fussed. I want something that is enough space for my family, so we can just go. But yeah, I would.
So you're taking the family.
A proper American style kind of
Winnebago
style. Things called, yeah, Winnebago.
No, not at all. Like, if I could, I would have a Winnebago without a shadow of a doubt.
You can have anything you want.
Oh, right, yeah.
Budget's not an issue.
Winnebago. And I would go to... I would either go to the cenotes in Mexico and swim in those, or I would just go to either Brecon or Scotland and just swim in the lakes and rivers.
Oh, if you turn up at the woods I'm hiding in, I'm going to be furious.
Unless you've got just a
Domino's. Disappears up. Stew's here in his Winnebago.
He's got garlic bread with cheese and then you're in.
He's got Ben and Jerry's in the fridge of his Winnebago.
Here he is in his Winnebago and his Speedos. Get out.
Well, we Chris and
Speedos.
I, a couple of years ago, Chris and I, because I love wild swimming, so I go and swim in lakes as often as I can. I was saying I haven't done it for, it was 2 years last week, haven't done it. Years ago, I was just...
Are your kids into wild swimming? Have you converted them yet?
Well, we went camping years ago, and I tried to convince everyone in the family that let's go camping. And my wife was like, I don't want to go camping. And I was like, come on. And so we went to the Cotswolds.
Is your wife Carol, the massive Bros fan?
Yes.
Yeah.
and we went swimming in the lakes in the Cotswolds, and it was just, it sounds, again, like Pippi, it sounds hippie, but... you spend all your life when you get to these nice places walking along the side of these lakes and rivers looking at them, but when you're in them looking back out, it's something completely different, and it's incredible and it feels amazing. And I've done that, and then I come out of there and I was like, right, I want to find out about this wild swimming stuff I've heard about. And then we made some little documentaries where we was going and trying to do as many as we can in like a weekend, and we go to Wales and Scotland. And then we went to Scotland last year, and I was saying to my daughter, like my youngest daughter, I said, do you want to do some wild swimming? And she was like, yeah. I said, shall we swim in Loch Ness? shall we go? And I made the mistake of going to the Loch Ness Museum beforehand, which was all about the shit that was in there and the monsters and stuff. But bless her. Bless her. She put a little wetsuit on and she came in with me.
Just about jumping in a lake. It's about using what nature has put in your path, isn't
Simple
it?
Simple as that. I've literally laid on my back in the middle of Lake Coniston in the Lake District, surrounded by mountains, just paddling around on my back, just blown away at how majestic the area is. And then just get out, have a little whiskey, and it's just beautiful.
And the silence and of the sound of nature is just, it's mind-blowing in those situations.
In those moments, yeah.
You may think beforehand, oh, what if there's some animals in there or whatever? It's like, yeah, there are.
Because they live here too.
It's fine. Like when you're actually in there, it's like, yeah, of course they are. It's fine. They're not bothered. I'm not bothered. No. It's all this beautiful, yeah.
And the best thing, no phone signal.
Yeah.
So no one can, no emails.
So it's so important, isn't it, sometimes for us to disconnect? We talk about how the importance of connecting all the time, but actually sometimes just taking all those plugs out and just being...
Totally.
Anxiety is growing and growing, and it is because we're connected to absolutely everything. Mm. So you're seeing all the time what you're right at that moment missing out on. And when you're doing wild swimming and whatnot, we walked for about 90 minutes to go up a mountain to sit in a lake that was... The water was, it was like a black mirror, and it was just the most, you're so present in that moment, aren't you? And all the stress is just
leaving you,
and you're freezing cold. But
sometimes
it's awesome.
That's good as well, right? Because it makes you feel alive.
Oh, completely.
It sharpens you.
Yeah. You've never felt better when you get out of one of them lakes or rivers. You feel completely incredible.
I had massive pressure on when I went to the Blue Lagoon for about a year, but because I had a guy called Wim Hof on the podcast, and he does this breathing thing about you have cold showers every morning, and it's amazing for your body and your immune
system.
Circulation,
yeah.
And I'd been and you controlled it through a breathing technique. So I'd been having cold showers every morning for about a year, and I love it. It's so it wakes you up so much, and it's so positive. It makes you feel great as soon as you come out. But that means because I've been banging on about that on the podcast, and more so to my long-suffering partner at the time, we get to this place and I'm like, I have to just get in there and not be bothered, and it's going to be cold, and I only had my trunks with me, and I was like, right.
Oh no, you need a wetsuit.
Yeah, I didn't have a wetsuit, but it was fine. I was pleased because, again, the breathing techniques, I don't know how much of it is mind over matter and how much of it is that Wim will explain the science behind it all. I think a lot of it is psychological, but it was all right in the end, but before I was going, I was like, man, I literally can't go or give any reaction because I've been bigging up so much. I have my cold showers every morning. It's fine. But again, as soon as I was in there, it was beautiful and I swam about for ages.
That's the fundamental difference between Pip and Chris and I. So he's approaching these wild swims thinking about the science of it and his breathing techniques because it might be cold. And all I was saying to Chris was, as soon as you get your wetsuit, in the minute it gets cold, just have a wee. It warms you up for about...
Because that lake that I was just talking about, we film a video of me just pissing myself, right?
But it does warm you up.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's a great survival technique.
It really... sums up the difference. I've spent a year learning breathing techniques to improve my immune system.
A Christmas showers.
Turn up and piss themselves. That's literally, that really sums up our friendship.
Brilliant. Unique selling point of the drunk cast right there. Yeah.
So Chris, where are you going on your year off? And what car are you in? And what are you going to do yourself?
I'd go into the mountains probably.
Where,
I think so. My favourite place to go.
We're literally all going to bump into each other. I'm going to be in the woods in the mountains. He's going to turn up at a lake in the mountains.
You can be at the base.
You're practical lumberjacks, a lot of you.
Yeah, let's just go together, guys. Okay, we'll record a hell of a podcast.
We're just making an excuse to escape all our responsibility. Yeah. So Stu will always take the piss out of me for being a rad dude and snowboarding, and I didn't discover that until I was like 27. And a big part of it isn't the snowboarding itself; it's the finding yourself on top of a mountain just surrounded by these just gigantic things that are doing nothing, and it's just insanely humbling. And I think when you go to the sort of like all the snowboarding villages, they can be quite lively, but it can be simpler in terms of what their life is. A lot of the people who work there, they'll work on the mountain or a restaurant, and then the time where they're not actually working, they'll go skiing or snowboarding, and that's their life, because it's so amazing, it's so relaxed, and it's so simple.
Really simple, actually. It's doing something you love and committing to that, and nothing else really, isn't it?
You don't need to complicate things. Keep it simple, Kate.
Interesting, isn't it, that we all work in a business that's wrapped in technology and communication, but But all three of you have chosen to just go and disconnect from all of that and just be at one with nature, be humbled by the surroundings and the simplicity of simple pleasures. Yeah. It's been a real pleasure to meet you. I've so enjoyed eavesdropping on your friendship, and I hope that tonight, you know, we can leave here and I can count you as friends of mine.
Yes, 100%.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us along.
And yes, please do check out Pod Bible. It's all you need to know about this crazy lovely landscape of spoken word. Listen to Distraction Pieces. There's Off the Beaten Track with Stu Whiffen. I've done that as a guest. It's a beautiful musical journey through people's lives. And then there's Hardcore Listings.
Yes.
That's us.
With Stu and Chris. So that's all you need to do by way of subscribing. As always, this podcast has been produced by Caitlin Mercer for Yahoo with me, Kate Thornton. Our music has been provided and beautifully created by Andy Bell. His new solo album, Glock, is out now. You can download that at iTunes and all good music outlets. Thank you so much for listening. Please do rate or review us if you're so inclined. And if you are lifting a glass as you listen to this, try to do what we do, which is drink responsibly. We'll see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.